Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Please begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's UDRP call on Monday, the 4th of April, we have Carlos Aguirre, John Barrett, Philip Shepherd, Jeff Newman, Christina Rosette, David Taylor, Mary Wong. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, Liz Gaster, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Zahid Jamil has informed us that he will be 10 to 15 minutes late on this call. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Margie.
Okay. Thank you, Gisela. I think the way we'll get started on this, since this isn't really a drafting team or a working work group, I thought the best, I propose an agenda, it's on the notes. Essentially, I'll provide a brief background of where we are and the questions we have for you guys. And then we can close it up with any other business or questions that you may have. Does that sound okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. So just to go through the slides, this is a slide deck that I presented at the San Francisco meeting. I'm not going to go through them all. I'll just go through the ones that are relevant to the work that we have before us. Essentially, staff has been asked to write an issues report on the UDRP, and on the slide I've highlighted the GNSO Council resolution that calls for the issue report. And the reason for the group coming together was to really help me, as I'm the person drafting the report, identify, what the intended scope of the resolution is and how best to proceed with writing the issue report. In San Francisco, we talked about conducting a webinar. That was one of the outcomes of the meetings in San Francisco, where we could solicit information from a group of people that have a background and have dealt with the UDRP and really can help highlight the issues. So that's probably the one of the things we'll talk about today is how to structure that webinar, who should be invited, when it should be scheduled, and if we get those questions answered, we can we can go ahead and set it up. So as you see on the slide here, this is the resolution from the GNSO Council that requested an issues report on the current state of the UDRP. And the resolution essentially highlights that the effort should consider how the UDRP has addressed the problem of cyber squatting to date and any insufficiencies or inequalities associated with the process. And it also identified the whether the definition of cyber squatting inherent would need to be updated or reviewed. And so, it requests that the issue report include suggestions on how a possible PDP on this issue might be managed. So, as I indicated in our meeting in San Francisco, this seemed to be a really broad request because if I'm writing a paper on the current state of the UDRP, I could write volumes and volumes on just that issue alone. And yet the resolution did have these two specific bullet points that were a little more narrow. And so one of my questions, as we'll get to later on today, is at least from your input, from the counselors that are on the call, what did you intend and whether you think it should be a broader issue report that just covers everything associated with the UDRP or perhaps more narrow that would address, specifically the issues that were raised in the resolution. And so with that, does anyone have any questions or comments on the resolution?
Margie, it's Christina. I just wanted to let you know I can't get into Adobe Connect. It's not playing well with our network security right now. So
okay.
I'll just let you know if I have questions as opposed to raising my hand.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone have any questions? Okay, let's move on then some of the slides that I went over in San Francisco, because I think it'll really highlight the issue that I have, which is there's in the research that I've done there's so much out there that it makes it difficult to really identify how to proceed with this. And part of the question, the setup for this call is to see whether you guys have suggestions on how to format it or how to narrow the issues so that, you know, so I can get this issue report written and delivered to the council quickly. I'm just skipping through these slides. On page 6, this slide talks about the documents that I actually looked at to prepare my presentation. And one of the questions I had for the group was whether any of you had suggestions on additional documents that I should refer to in preparing the issues report. I did, you know, obviously look at the UDRP, the final report of the working group, and and these other documents that are listed here. It's interesting that in 2003 there was a staff issue report talking about the UDRP that never actually was acted upon, and a PDP was never actually approved. Jeff, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, and I think I brought this up at the meeting over the weekend. There were a bunch of documents that were filed right around the time of the IRT report, either leading up to it and after it, about a whole bunch of issues that intellectual property owners had with the UDRP, the current state of the UDRP. Conversely, I think after the IRT report came out, there were a bunch of comments filed by the non-commercial stakeholder group on some of the issues they saw with the UDRP. I think looking at some of those documents would be really probably the best, most up-to-date issues that are out there, since that was only a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think that would be a good place to draw some information from.
Yeah, Jeff, I remember that from the meeting in San Francisco, and I will do that. I plan to go through those documents this week to see if it highlights any other issues. Any other suggestions for, you know, there's tons of documents, there's tons of decisions, there's, you know, INTA articles on domaining abuse and, you know, cyber squatting. I mean, there's just so much. That's part of the frustration I have as a staff person in trying to glean through all this material. So I don't know if any others have any suggestions on something that, you know, would be appropriate to look at. The ICANN Paris workshop, which was in 2008, I believe, focused on compliance issues primarily. So it wasn't really looking at the state of the UDRP as a whole, but really focused in on registrar compliance-related issues. And internally, I've been discussing with the compliance staff kind of issues of what they've been dealing with respect to UDRP. So I'll have that information available as well in the issue report that I draft. My question to the rest of you is if you have any other suggestions for documents that I should look at, or does this seem to be a good approach to focus on these documents?
WIPO just released, didn't they just release something, maybe Christina knows better, but didn't they just release something last week, WIPO 2.0 or something, a document I saw last week that they updated their FAQs and did a big release on increase in cyber squatting or increase in number of cases.
Oh, their press release that came out. And yeah, to be honest with you, I was on travel for most of that last week and haven't read it yet, but I saw something in my inbox. Let's see if I can find it.
Yeah, this is David here. Yeah, they did send that out. They do that pretty frequently anyway at the end of each year, sort of highlighting what the state of the UDRP is and the number of cases, et cetera. So, yeah, there is that. That's well worth looking at. I can send that to you if you want, Margie. I've got a copy.
Margie, it's Christina. Has there been, I don't know how this works, given that there really isn't any contract or other document governing the relationship between ICANN and the UDRP providers, but is there any kind of reporting that's done, or has any effort been made to get in touch with the providers to find out, you know, are there recurring issues that they are seeing that from a provider administration perspective should be dealt with?
Christina, that's a good question, and I don't know. I'm not even sure which department within is responsible for that, whether it would be the legal department or the compliance department. Clearly, there's no contract, so my
right.
guess is it's probably a compliance issue. But I'll go ahead and check and see if we have some information, because I'm sure there's been correspondence with FICO and others for the years, and I don't know if they've consolidated that or had any sort of process for dealing with that. But that's a good suggestion.
Well, I think that's a good topic for the webinar too, is to invite, providers in and others to not even discuss all the issues in detail or give, just kind of lay out, here's what issues we think exist that may need some resolution.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let me just pull up the issues that I've highlighted so far. I did send them around in the link to the document, but these issues are the issues that in going through the documents that I discussed seem to come up by providers in the webinar. I mean, in the seminar that we did in Paris 2008, they're fairly substantive, and maybe this is the question for you guys, is do you see a logical way for these issues to be broken up, and if so, how, whether from as I write this issues report, whether you feel that it should be something that should be dealt with all at once or broken up into subgroups. And so I think I'll set the document so that it's not synced. You can flip through it yourself, but the slides from slide 9 through through about 13 highlight the issues that I uncovered in going through this analysis. As you look through them, for example, on slide 9, I start with policy issues that really talk about how to address the policy issues or enhance the policy. But there's also process issues and other issues that I've highlighted. And so my question for you all is, do you have any suggestions on or thoughts on grouping them or dealing with this issue as a whole or in subgroups? I think that'd be useful to hear from you whether that's what your preferred approach would be with respect to that issue.
This is a quiet group.
No, Margie, I'm looking at the list. My initial reaction is to say that it would probably make sense to kind of keep the process issues together and the substance issues together, but then I guess you could make the argument that there are certain process issues that are associated with independent on substantive issues.
Well, I mean, I think it's almost like, kind of you would have some sort of working group, and then you'd have sub-teams of the working group that work on these issues separately and then come back ultimately with the working group reviewing the final product. But it's probably a good idea to have sub-teams divided by the substance and the process. I don't know where others fit in. I mean, the other issues on slide 13. Or maybe that's a separate subgroup in and of itself. People could be on more than one subgroup if they want.
Right, but I think that's going to be your real problem, is that running them concurrently, simultaneously, I think is going to be really challenging. Because I would imagine, for example, that I'm assuming that representatives from each of the providers are going to want to participate, if only because they have experience and can say, well, if you do this, then it's going to, you're going to push the cost up to this. Or you know, this sounds really straightforward, but it's actually really complicated, that type of thing. And I think as a, and I think that's probably true for other persons in the community apart from the providers. And I think this is having everything run simultaneously would make full participation very challenging, I think.
Yeah, but it's harder to do chronologically.
I'm just wondering whether you want to break up the substantive policy issues and try and kind of group them. Like, can you group them into... Margie, have you seen anything that kind of grouped anything thematically?
No, and I threw this list pretty quickly together prior to the Silicon Valley meeting. I didn't really spend time in trying to see if there was some logical breakdown of it. The issue that I have is, you know, obviously with my background, I understand the trademark issues and, you know, and they're pretty complex. There's, you know, a lot of legal issues associated with this. I sort of wonder about the working groups and how much knowledge, you know, there will be with, you know, within the working group to deal with some of these issues, or expertise, and what the people who have the expertise will be able to participate, because that's, you know, it's really a legal issue on some of these things. But it looks like I do have a queue here. Philip, do you want to, you were first in the queue?
Thanks. I think just to say, I mean, I think if we go back to the council resolution, councillors may have a greater feel for what was intended there. I mean, there was clearly a focus on addressing cyber squatting. To my mind, that itself is broad enough. So I'd have thought if we had a focus on cyber squatting and substantive policy issues for that as scope for now, that would be a very good start, and that might, you know, lead on to recommendations for other things. But I'd have thought that itself would be quite sufficient, and I fully support what we heard from Christina earlier, that I think this is a case where you would simply have problems trying to split it up into too many parallel groups because of overlap and time commitments.
I see that. I also have David in the queue.
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'd probably... just echo really what Philip said, because I was just looking through the issues identified by the community and going again back to the recommendation, because the way I'm, and maybe I'm wrong on this one, but it was certainly looking at balanced revisions to address cyber squatting, if appropriate, was going back to that, the recommendation one. So we're really concentrating on the cyber squatting angle. So when I see some of these issues here, like the language of proceedings, consent to transfer, is on slide 11, I don't know where the consent to transfer really comes into the cyber squatting. So to me, it seems quite a bit broad because there's a lot of issues here in there, which if we start trying to do them all in parallel or sequentially, we've got something which is quite difficult. So I'd be tempted to be sort of more restrictive, as Philip was saying there, and try and get some of the early points you've got there and get those clear and thought through and get the data on that. So I think we can get a lot of data from the providers, and that's what we really need to do, is have the data so we can make some policy decisions based on that and have the working groups work through it.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. Looks like we've got, John and Mary in the queue. John?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Clearly cyber squatting, which is the only stated outcome, if you look at, you know, the definition of the UDRP on the ICANN website, we certainly want to focus on that. But if you take a look at, as Jeff has pointed out, the comments that have come in over the last couple of years, which have tried to, without getting at the core of the UDRP process, nibble around the edges of the business constituency, for example, offering up comment that no new providers be approved until ICANN has some consistent contract mechanism to validate the capability of each. But I do think that when we look at cyber squatting as a big issue, it naturally draws, or there are other smaller issues, the substantive policy issues that drafts that big one. Just looking at the first one you have there, the bad faith use requirement. So, I mean, if the policy says bad faith and use, then, you know, some people have talked to me about the fact that UDRP decisions have spun on either and not both. And so the question is the language of the UDRP clear? And are the providers following the rule of the UDRP? And a thing that I would really like to get at is, the compliance is an overarching issue for ICANN in a whole lot of ways. The almost every agreement it has requires some oversight and compliance, and they do a varying job with each. In terms of oversight, compliance with regard to UDRP, I mean, one of the things I'd like to know is, as you state, in number two, cyber squatting definition differs from national laws. You know, there are a lot of nations, there are a lot of UDRP decisions that then get appealed to national courts. You know, what happens in that case? I've not really seen a report that captures how many UDRP decisions are overturned. And then, of course, if they're consistently overturned from a particular provider or mediator, does that disqualify that provider or mediator? I mean, where's the review and the compliance on that? So those would be my points.
But I think just to follow up on John's comment, sorry, I think we need to be very careful how we do that, and I can tell you from my experience that almost all of the UDRP cases that we handle that are appealed don't go to judgment. So I would be inclined to say that maybe what would be helpful, and I'm happy to do it, is put together a list of questions that I think maybe we need clear answers from the providers on before we start going down process issues. But I don't know. I thought I had a clear idea of where I wanted to take this, and now I'm even more confused.
Yeah, you can understand my frustration in drafting this issue report. I have no idea where to go with this. I mean, from a selfish standpoint, focusing on the policy itself makes it more manageable, but you know, I don't know if that was the GNSO Council's intent or not, hence some of my questions. Any other comments on this point?
Margie, this is Mary. Can I just add to what others have said?
Yes, go ahead.
So, I mean, I'm trying to think about it sort of from a higher level, looking at the list of issues that one way to do it is to, and it's not the easiest way, but at least as a starting point, to separate out what we in the drafting team identify as pure substantive policy issues. But there are also those in this list that I think, judging by what others have said, we sort of think could also go into more of a process issue basket, so that we've got two different categories, even if they overlap. And what we probably need to do is prioritize within each category. And to that extent, I think having a questionnaire, as was suggested, for providers to answer would be useful. Maybe getting some further feedback from those communities that Jeff identified as having expressed the latest interest in this exercise as to their thoughts on ranking those issues. And finally, I think one of the things just working through the IRT process and looking at public comments and everything else is people would, I think, really appreciate some kind of data summary, whether or not they quibble with the actual data, but having it there in the issues report, I'm sure that's what you intend already. But to the extent that the sources that we consult have data, to the extent that the questionnaires, whatever they are, have further information and data, I think that would be very, very helpful. So two suggestions there. Thanks.
So this idea of a questionnaire is a really, I think, is a good one. And is it something that would precede the webinar? I mean, we can talk now about you know, what the structure of the webinar would be and who should be invited and what the, you know, if for example, we were going to invite representatives of each provider, we could, you know, precede that with a questionnaire on things we'd like them to address. What do you think about that?
This is Mary again. I mean, just my instinctive answer, I guess, is that it might be more productive when the webinar is concerned if at least we already had a questionnaire. So regardless of whether we actually had the final issues or the final responses, if we already had a questionnaire of sorts, we'd at least know what sort of topics we might want to focus on, and we could change the order of them or change the topics themselves as responses come back.
This is Christine. If I could get in the queue and there's a minute.
Okay, I think I have David first and then Christina.
Thanks, Margie. Yeah, no, I certainly think, I mean, going back to my earlier point, we need the facts and the data before we can really do anything on this. So I think it is something, a questionnaire to go out to the providers to get that information back, which they'll need some time, because a lot of this stuff, I mean, the discussion there about number of decisions which are appealed, a lot of the time if you talk to the providers, they have no idea how many decisions get appealed because they don't know whether it actually goes through to a final judgment or not. And a lot of complainants or respondents don't bother telling them, you know, the result of any appeal. So that side of things is quite hard. I don't think they've got data to hand on that, but it's certainly data which they could dig through all of their decisions and try and find and get something to talk about. So I'd certainly agree with Mary on that. I think we should do the webinar after we've got, you know, that questionnaire out, because then we'll know what sort of results are coming back from each of the providers, and we've got some good, you know, data to discuss. And if we haven't got that, we tend to discuss the things where, you know, the rogue case of we've had this case here and I've had this and we've heard of this, et cetera, and you end up discussing something which possibly happens in 1 in 1,000 cases. So I don't think we should be wasting our time discussing that.
Looks like Philip is in agreement on that. Any volunteers to come up with a questionnaire or any objections to producing a questionnaire?
I'm certainly happy to help out with the questionnaire doing it, not by myself by any means, but certainly happy to.
This is okay. Berard. I'd work with David on that.
Okay. That's David and John. Anyone else want to volunteer to help prepare a questionnaire? Okay, I'll help you guys. I think that's actually useful. In terms of timing, when do you think the webinar should take place? I think Jeff in San Francisco, you indicated that you'd like to have the issue report completed by the next meeting, which would be Singapore. So my assumption is the webinar should take place somewhere, you know, in between, so that I have enough time to, get the information that was, received in the webinar and produce the report. So I'm thinking early May, late April. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, this is Jeff. That's what I was thinking of. When that gives you enough time to get some stuff together and then the documents published in time to adequately review before the Singapore meeting. But with this questionnaire, though, I didn't quite understand where, were we doing that in parallel? Were we doing that one first and the other?
I think the questionnaire, if I understand the intent, should be out fairly quickly. We're already now in, first week of April. So, by next week, I would think we have the questionnaire out and we schedule the webinar for late April. And the question is, I guess, who received the questionnaire, as John indicated, and who else should be invited to participate in the webinar? I assume we don't want just providers participating in it. And so that's a question to you all. And it looks like I got Philip in the queue.
Yeah, just on the question of timelines, I mean, I think it's absolutely right that we have an informed webinar. We attempt to structure it by this questionnaire. Now, if we're doing that, that means that the critical path is no longer that hours, but the response time from the providers, so the people who are answering the questionnaire. And I think that probably means you've got to be reasonably gentle. It depends on your questions. Huh? But if we're going to ask them to do a little bit of data digging of stuff they may not have to hand, so more than we see from the WIPO annual reports, et cetera, you're going to have to give them sufficient time for that. So I would have thought attempting to do this and bundle it by Singapore is overly ambitious.
So remember, Phil, this is a preliminary issue report that we're talking about in order so that people can file comments on it and then to draft the final one some point following Singapore.
Whoa, wait a second.
No.
I didn't realize we were doing this under the new PDP rules.
Yeah, I didn't either. I was assuming we were doing the old approach,
yeah.
So I would have one issue report, and that's this. In the past we've done issues reports. The annexe said 15 days, but I don't see how that's possible with this topic. But whatever the outcome is of the webinar, I would just produce an issue report, and then that's it, and the council would then vote on whether they want to proceed with the PDP and how. And part of the issue report would talk about switches.
Let me ask the question then, because it's kind of interesting, the visceral reaction. You all think that it wouldn't be better to have put a paper out for comment and then have it improved upon and then voted? You guys would prefer just to go straight to the vote?
I'm not necessarily saying that. I just think that there are components of the new PDP process that are, from my perspective, unresolved and problematic, and I think we're going to end up going in circles if we try and apply that process in its entirety to this issue.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the idea, just take the initiative report separate from everything else recommended by the PDP work team. I thought it would probably be beneficial as a good recommendation to come out with a preliminary issues report so that we can all make sure we understand it, we can understand what's in there, comment on it, have a final one produced.
Are you anticipating under that timing that the final would be ready by Singapore, or that the first draft would be ready for Singapore?
Draft out for comment by Singapore so that people can discuss it, can file their comments at some point after Singapore to get a final one after Singapore. I just think it makes sense because we've been stuck with some issues reports where groups have been just kind of scratching their head going, okay, what the hell does that mean? Plus, don't forget, we have to draft a charter at some point if there is a PDP. So it'd be nice to have a good, concrete issue report that, someone can take that and draft a charter and move forward with it. So I just think it makes more sense to do it that way. I'm happy to follow completely the bylaws and do it. It's going to go through, but I'd rather have something that we all can, like a document that we all can know what we're doing.
I mean, I'm okay either way. I was prepared to just do a final issue report, I don't know. I mean, David, you have your hand raised. Do you have a comment on this?
No, well, I wasn't specifically on that. It was more just following what Philip had said as well, because if the issue is going to be what questions we ask and the amount of time it would take providers and or anyone else to come back with meaningful data. So obviously, if we're asking simple questions, how many UDRPs have been filed, how many have been transferred, how many have been, et cetera, that's standard, and that we'd get back within 24 hours. It's if we're asking, which seems to be one of the fundamentals of, the unpredictability of decisions, how many have been appealed, that I think is a question which may require, more than a couple of weeks to get that information together if you're looking at several tens of thousands of cases. So I think we've got to be fair to whoever we're asking that we give them the time to give us the data back. So that seems to be one of the limiting factors on timing. So I don't know whether that could be built into getting this done by Singapore.
Well, let me just this is Jeff. I'll state my opinion is that we should have a preliminary issues report that people should be able to comment on. By Singapore, published for Singapore so everyone could discuss it, see what's out there, and have a comment period that closes a few weeks after Singapore, and a final report a month or whatever, 20, 30 days after that. That would be my preference.
Can you guys
Jeff, we haven't in IPC we haven't discussed that, so I can't commit one way or another. We're having some calls about this in the next few days, so you know, we can certainly raise that.
Do you know of any potential objections to that, or
I just think that there's probably, I think it would really be the timing of the public comment period in terms of, you know, are the dates going to be different if it's 2 versus 1 and so on and so forth. You know, I can't unilaterally make that kind of decision on behalf of the constituency. I just can't.
Well, Christina, to comment, I don't think there is a public comment period on an issue report.
But under what Jeff is suggesting, there would be. So
that's right.
That's kind of what I'm trying to kind of figure out.
I'll set up here again. I'm just going back to what questions we ask and what data we're gathering. I mean, you've got to bear in mind who we're asking. I mean, if we're going to WIPO, WIPO is, in general, not the fastest moving organization. If the questions could all be answered by the WIPO secretariat, we might have a relatively fast response. That means weeks, not days. If we're asking questions the secretariat themselves would need to cascade down to the individual panelists for responses, we're then talking a process that may well take them weeks to months. So we need to be very cautious. The timeline here is, to my mind, not of our choice. It's very much going to be in the hands of those for whom we are gathering the data from.
David, you have a comment?
Yep. I think, well, I would have hoped on this, if we're doing the questionnaire, we'd probably be going just for the data which the secretariat or the provider themselves can provide. Certainly, if we were to filter down and try and get information through from panelists, that ties in then with the whole sort of ongoing issues of the jurisprudence of the UDRP, etc. And there's a lot of paperwork. You've got the sort of consensus views and all that sort of things, which exists, which is being reviewed, and a new version will be out shortly, which is worked on by panelists over several years. So, I mean, I wouldn't think we'd be delving into that at all, because we'd be keeping away from the legal aspects, I would have thought, and looking more at the data which the providers can provide. So hopefully it's something which we'd get in weeks, as Philip says, but I think it's something, to be fair, you know, time-wise, I was just thinking if we asked them something, we'd hopefully get it back within a month and hopefully a bit earlier. So, I mean, if we're looking at 3 to 4 weeks, that would be feasible. And then to have a webinar, which I still think we can do the webinar, before Singapore. So if we've got the data back, and we run a webinar mid-May or end of May or something like that, so that we've got the discussion out there, we've got some quite good in place, I would have thought, and that would probably work.
This is Christina. If I can get in the queue and there's a minute.
Go ahead, Christina.
Two things. First, well, several things. First, I think we should try and get the questionnaire out as soon as possible. And to that end, I think we should just decide when we need responses. And if providers want their data incorporated, then, you know, not being unreasonable about it, but just making very clear that because of the timetable that we can only give them, say, 3 weeks. And that, you know, if they want to submit partial data, if they won't have data completed by that time, that we understand. But I think it should be relatively... I think there are things that we just need to be clear about what it is we may or may not be able to ask if we're expecting to get data back, the appeals thing for one thing. And that second, I think we probably should go ahead and schedule the webinar so that it's not dependent on having received completed questionnaires, simply because, A, I think that sets us up for some timing issues, and, B, I think they're not necessarily interdependent on each other.
Christina, this is Margie. I agree with you. I think that, you know, remember, we're not doing research of the PDP. That a lot of the detailed stuff can happen if a PDP gets launched, right? And then you can give the sufficient time for them to answer and all that to gather the data. This is really kind of a preliminary step to help us determine how to proceed with a PDP if one, you know, is to happen on this topic. So I can see those being, you know, and that's not necessarily tied. If they want to address those issues in the webinar, they can. If they want to, you know, if they don't have sufficient data, you know, we'll just let them know that, you know, if the PDP proceeds, you know, we'll
Fine. That's absolutely fine. And they may have insight, frankly, as to how best to group some of these issues.
Right. That's right. Any other comments? Okay, so let's talk specifically, because we probably have about 15 minutes left, on who to invite to the webinar. Now, obviously, we'll send an invitation out to WIPO. Should we send it to all of the providers?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we have to, yeah. David here, sorry.
Right, so we're talking four?
We got to make it clear that I'm not sure, depending on how we set it up, if we set it up as like a question and answer maybe, but we can't have four speak. And that'll take up the entire webinar.
So how do you suggest, Jeff, managing it? Because it's difficult in a webinar to jump from, you know, panelists, except through organized time periods.
Couldn't we, on the provider section, have each provider identify what they would consider to be the three or four, you know, for purposes of ensuring that the UDRP is as effective and, you know, going back to whatever the language in the resolution is, you know, what are the five areas that they believe are most worthy of attention and why, and limit each to, you know, 5 minutes. 5, 6, 7 minutes maximum, and make it very clear that this is not a commercial for the provider. This isn't, you know, for certain providers to pursue grudges with other providers, you know, as we all know, because otherwise it will turn out that way. And just make it very constrained as to what it is that we're looking for from them. I think if you do that and you're very clear and precise about what they can and cannot do and what you expect from them, I actually disagree with Jeff. I think it's possible to kind of, you know, have 20 minutes devoted to the providers and do it that way.
David here, just to add to that, I think, I mean, obviously something like the CAC will have a lot less data than WIPO because they've been around for a lot less time. So they can probably do the analysis in a couple of days of the number of cases which they've had to deal with on the UDRP. So again, I wouldn't have thought necessarily that they'd want to spend the same length of time discussing certain areas. So between the providers, they may well agree on how to run their own session, but we should probably open up and say, all welcome to speak, here's a set amount of time, and try and get them together to decide how they want to do it.
Okay, so the providers would be one part of it. Who else do we invite to get kind of different views?
I think we need to have several panelists in there. Sorry, David again. From different areas, so, you know, US, European, et cetera, panelists. So we've got a selection of them who've done a lot of cases and looked at a lot of cases because they've got the experience.
It's Liz. I've heard different people say, you know, UDRP is working, UDRP isn't working. Maybe something that would help highlight what is or isn't working.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you ask John Berryhill, he would love to come and be on a panel. I mean, he certainly has represented a lot of UDRP defendants, so he'd be a good candidate to have, you know, to kind of express his views. I don't know if there's kind of the equivalent of who's done the most UDRP as a plaintiff. I don't know if there's a practitioner that you put into that category.
Well, I mean, the guy who does domain name Wire, I think, has done, somebody has printed reports of the top 10 panelists in terms of who rules most frequently in favor of complainants and who rules most frequently in favor of respondents. And I assume that those are just kind of statistical, kind of very objective in terms of somebody heard 30 decisions and how they've ruled. So, you know, we could certainly do that. I don't have an issue with, you know, I don't have any objection to John Berryhill doing it. I just think that once we start getting into representatives of parties, then things get sticky quickly, I think.
Yeah, I don't want it to turn into WIPO and its panelists and, you know, everyone and its panelists, because that's...
I'm not saying that, and I completely agree. If we're going to have panelists, and I'm frankly not persuaded that we should, I'm on the fence, then it needs to be, you know, one panelist from each provider. You know, I don't want this to be any provider gets an advantage over any other provider.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. David here and Christina, I think one from each provider makes a lot of sense. And I've certainly no objection either to John Berryhill. I was on the panel with him at that WIPO, the 10 years conference of UDRP, and they invited John Berryhill, and he was excellent. So no issue at all with John being on there. And the fact that WIPO invited him along to that year, you know, the 10 years conference, I think underlines that they don't really see any, I don't see any bias in the whole thing. So.
Who else was on the panel?
I can't remember now, to be honest. I know I was, and I know John was, and I'd have to look back and remember, because it was a full-day session, so there was a lot of different speakers. I can look it up now while we're online and come back to you and tell you if you want.
Yeah, the link to their materials is on my slide, so you might be able to find it faster. But if you're talking about one panelist from each provider, then that's another 20 minutes, right? Does that seem like a reasonable amount of time, or are there, I don't know, civil liberties or other, you know, viewpoints that I'm trying to think of the people that objected when we were doing the IRT and the STI work.
I'm thinking if you have, it's going to be too much to have both the providers get 20 minutes and the panelists get 20 minutes. I think that's just going to be a little bit overboard. I think a lot of people will get kind of you'll get those same types of complaints that you got from the IRT complainers. But I'm trying to think of a, you know, that's why I was trying to say if there are some notable UDRP plaintiffs attorneys and some notable defense attorneys to kind of express what they think the issues are. I mean, look, Lego has filed a huge amount of UDRP. I don't know if they're the top filers, but you might want to have an attorney
they're
who represents...
And then that implicates Bruce as a board member from Melbourne IT, so I think we're probably better off not going there.
Because
Melbourne IT files all their UDRP complaints.
Interesting. Did not know that. So, but I guess my point is if we could find a common filer and a common defense, I mean, that might be kind of interesting to get the perspectives of, you know, here's what they see are kind of the issues, and, I mean, that might be at least semi-interesting.
Maybe the way to go about it is somewhat differently and ask the providers to identify their top two, you know, filers and the two attorneys or firms that appear most frequently on behalf of respondents. And then we'll have a pool, presumably, of at least three or four names. And then we can go from there. You know, if it turns out that it's, you know, just two names, well, then that's clear who we go with.
Yeah, and I think on both sides, who's the top filers and who's the top defense?
Yeah, no, that's, I completely agree. I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah,
and I think that's good. I actually like the fact of having the providers with a session, but also with the panelists and not choosing panelists who are, because I don't think panelists are pro-complainants or pro-respondent necessarily. So I don't, you know, I think that's something which is separate, and I think my view, I like the idea of having panelists. So I think we can learn a lot from them, having been to a lot of panelist meetings. They really do know the UDRP inside out probably better than most people around, so they're good people to have separately, but not there as being complainants attorneys or respondents attorneys. So I'd put, you know, the if need be, the John would have been, the number of cases brought, et cetera, to really discuss and find out where we can go. So I think that fits quite nicely.
I have Mary in the queue. Mary?
Thanks, Margie. Actually, I think David pretty much said what I wanted to say. I think if we structure it that way, it will provide a lot of valuable information to people who may not actually know some of the nuts and bolts as well, and I think it would be fairly balanced. It may well be that coming out of that, we might need to do another one with follow-up questions, but I think for now, that sounds like a pretty good start to me.
Any other comments?
So we're talking about a webinar that's probably, what, like an hour and a half, 2 hours?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's good to have, and I think maybe too we decide we might want to continue it in Singapore or do another panel there or something like that. It goes well.
I actually agree. I think it would be a lovely thing to have in Singapore. I mean, we have these sessions, and this would be one of the most interesting ones to have there if we can get all the people involved. And whether we do a second webinar or a follow-up webinar, or maybe we'll end up on timing that this is done then, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Margie, what else do you need from us?
I think I guess the question is, should we schedule one more call perhaps next Monday? And I'll send a kind of a summary of what we talked about today on the list and have the folks working on the questionnaire send something around in the next few days. How does that sound in terms of timing? And I'll also propose in the email a date for the webinar. So we'll start, figuring that out as well.
Next Monday, same time is good for me. This is John.
Yep.
Just David, I'd probably prefer Tuesday. I've already got 6 calls on Monday, kicking off from 4 p.m., so I'm going to have difficulty finding a slot on Monday. But Tuesday would work for me.
Is Tuesday better for you all?
Tuesday works.
Yeah, this is Mary. I can't do Tuesday morning up to noon Eastern time, but I should be good after that.
Okay, I'll ask Gisela to send a doodle around, and it'll just be one other call because I didn't intend this to be an ongoing working thing, but this is certainly useful. We can decide after the next call if there's a need for another call. Does that sound like a plan to you guys?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you all. This is extremely helpful. And like I said, I'll follow up on the list.
Thanks, Margie. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.